Welcome to Beyond the Wish, where we delve into the power of wishes and the people who make them possible. I'm your host, Sloan McHugh, and today's episode is about leaving a lasting impact, and it's a Wishmaker highlight on Mike Wormuth. Mike's journey with Make-A-Wish began in 2019 as a wish granter, and his passion quickly led him to join the board of directors. His professional expertise and firsthand volunteer experience have been crucial to the chapter's growth and stability. He has served in key leadership roles, including leading the fund development and compensation committees, acting as vice chair, and ultimately being elected board chair in 2023. A true strategic thinker, Mike and his wife Stephanie have also been incredibly generous philanthropists. Their leadership gift to the Wish Kids Need Us Now campaign inspired others to help sustain the organization through the pandemic. Their commitment extends beyond a single campaign, as they've supported the chapter in numerous ways, from contributing to the new office space to including the organization in their estate plans. Mike is a strong advocate for having board members serve as wish granters and often mentors new volunteers. As his tenure as board chair concludes, his dedication remains as strong as ever, recently demonstrated by a record-breaking $2.5 million gift to the chapter, bringing their total commitment to over $3.5 million and remaining as an active wish grantor volunteer. Thank you for joining us today. Can you start off by sharing a little bit about you and your background and upbringing and what kind of has led us to this point of being involved at Make-A-Wish?
Yeah, well, first of all, Sloan, thanks for the opportunity. Secondly, I'd love to tell you there was a grand plan that got me to this point, but it was a series of circumstances. However, it did start. I grew up just a little bit north of Madison, and it's a kind of a farming community, a little town called DeForest. Most people stop at Culver's on the way north of Wisconsin. But I grew up there and really didn't plan to go to college, but through a variety of different things, I just kind of fell into place. I ended up going to school, worked at Abbott for 30 plus years, met my wife there, and we're going on 40 years of marriage. We're 39 now. I got to figure out exactly what to do for 40. Apparently that's a big deal. Yeah. I got to get that right. And what kind of got started is, I'm a typical Midwestern guy. You work hard, do your best at what you can do, find something that you're passionate about. I didn't know it was going to be Make-A-Wish in my second career. That's what I call, I'll be 63 in December. So I think I can officially call it my second career. But ultimately, you know, we have three kids. We have four grandchildren, which is a whole new experience and fantastic. But when I started working at Abbott, I had a chance to make a product called Cervanta, which is used, and I didn't know what it was, to be honest. I just was making it. I could have been making bottled water for all I knew. But I was committed to it, and it was a big deal. So I didn't develop it, but I was the guy that helped manufacture it with another gentleman there. And it turns out it was for preemies. And I've been in neonatal intensive care units all over the world. I had a job that allowed me to do a lot of travel, forced me to do a lot of travel. But I always took the time to go to NICU units because when I saw what that product did for a baby, it just grabbed me. And it's not something I can explain. There's no algorithm. There's nothing like that. But it really jumped out and grabbed me. And I always knew that I had a soft spot for kids. That just completely changed the game. And my wife was pregnant with our first kid at the time. And it just gave me the belief that not everybody's entitled to have a kid that's going to come out and everything's going to be fine. There are issues. And so when I retired, I wanted to continue to give back and Make-A-Wish seemed like a natural next step.
So what was your first introduction to Make-A-Wish? What kind of led you here as opposed to maybe another organization?
Because I knew it was going to be about children and children with illnesses. And I was one of those guys that thought Make-A-Wish was terminally ill children as well. And then I became educated and realized that it was critically ill children. And there is a big difference there. But they're all in need. And because I had been so focused on NICU units, it seemed like a natural progression. So I had retired after 32 plus years at Abbott. I knew I wasn't just going to sit around the house and look out the window and drink coffee. I'm not that kind of retiree. That was fun for about a day. And then I was done with that. And so I decided to get into volunteerism, and this was just such a natural fit. So I actually reached out. I'm the one that contacted Make-A-Wish. And what I'm very proud of is, you know, everybody talks about the money we've given, and I'm the on the board, and I'm the chair of the board and all that stuff. But I'm actually most proud of the fact that I'm a very active wish grantor. And that's how I got involved in the organization. And just a quick, I think it's funny. I went down to someplace in like South Central Illinois. It was one of the last events that you had for a wish grantor training. And I walked into this place. It was a, I think it was a high school or a junior college, something like that. And I walk in, and there were 10 people in the room, and they were all young women. And they looked at me and said, "Are you in the right place?" Because here I am, you know, at the time I was in my mid-50s. And I just like, what doesn't belong in this picture? And it was me. And one of the ladies said, "Well, the welding class is next door." I'm like, well, I could do a little welding maybe while I'm here, but I'm here for wish grantor training. And it turned out to be really the thing that sealed the deal for me, because I had so much fun learning about what the opportunities were. So I leaned in very quickly to becoming a wish grantor. And then things just morphed from there into bigger roles. But I am never going to get away from wish granting.
Is there a specific wish or wish story that has stuck with you the most?
So I'm on wish 8 right now, maybe wish 9. They're all memorable, and I still keep in touch with the kids, even from years ago that I granted wishes for, not only the kid, but the families as well. And in a way, and you know this as well as anybody, you become in effect an extension of the family. And for a lot of reasons, but I've become very active with all of them. So it's hard to pick out one or two. The one that was probably the most grandiose was Cyrus, where he became Mind's Eye, and we had the Chicago Police Department and the SWAT team and the K-9 unit, police escort, ended at Navy Pier catching the criminal. That was remarkable because that was 11 hours of sheer joy for Cyrus and his little brother, Gordy, and then the family. They all had fun. But the other one that was for not necessarily the right reason, but one that was remarkably impactful. Out of all the kids I've worked with, they've gone on, they're leading really great lives. I mean, they still have issues. The illnesses don't go away. One of my wish kids, Mia, she passed away before we could deliver the wish. And I still get emotional thinking about that kid, because she just had, I don't know, or something about her. She just had a brightness in her that was hard to see how she could be going through such devastating circumstances and never stop smiling. And she's been an inspiration in a lot of ways. In fact, as we do the naming campaign here for the different rooms with the fundraising, we bought the biggest room and we're naming it in her honor.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah. No, it's great.
Yeah.
And I'm going to bring her mom and her brother in for it when we do the naming ceremony. But all the kids leave a mark on you.
And even for people who listen to the podcast regularly, Cyrus's wish has come up multiple times as kind of a common thread between different stories. And as we talk about, could be very vastly different topics. Yeah. That is one of the wishes that kind of always pulls through.
But you know, though, Sloan, while that one was big and public and on the news and all that stuff, the other ones, while they don't get the same, and you know, this is better than anybody, all of these wishes, when you make that connection to the kid and to the family, and you see the anticipation of what they're bringing every day, they talk to you and they're like, when are we going to do this? And can I do that? Can I bring my brother? Can I bring my sister? You feel the anticipation. And I know we talk about that a lot within the foundation, but I wish people understood that this isn't just about the wish. It's about everything that precedes the wish and then the follow-up after the wish. It is truly a process that is it's an emotional journey, but a really great journey to be on.
Yeah. And it doesn't end at the wish either.
Correct.
Like you were saying, like it continues on with our alumni program and wish grantors, like you stay in touch with the families. It's not just, oh, the wish date happens and you cut ties and go your separate ways. It's a common theme with a lot of our wish grantors of like, oh, we still talk to like the first wish I granted 15 years ago. We're still really close with the family. We talk often. We heard it when Dr. Thrush came in. It's something that really sticks with the family. And I'm sure as you've experienced, it's a really impactful thing to be a part of.
And that's, I tried to, you just described it better than I did, but that's what I meant when I said they leave a mark on you. Mm-hmm. And it's a very positive one that I feel grateful for the opportunity to be able to do it. And, you know, one of the things, Sloan, that has been kind of surprising to me is how much I'm getting out of this. Because I always thought about giving back. I didn't think I'd be getting what I'm getting out of it in terms of pure joy and feeling like you're making a difference. And I, my wife and I even talk about that. And I feel guilty sometimes, like I'm enjoying it. Maybe, I don't know if you can enjoy something too much, but I didn't expect to get this out of being involved.
It's an indescribable feeling.
Exactly.
To be part of that wish, even if it's like Jamaria's wish that you were just a part of.
Yeah.
Weren't necessarily the wish grantor on the wish, but just going and experiencing it and being there. It's one of those things that just is really hard to describe of like how cool it is and how memorable it is to be part of that wish.
Well, Jamaria's wish, I'm glad you brought that up. It's hard to describe when it was, if I remember right, it was like 90 degrees out that day and we're out in the sun. And I'm thinking like, what am I complaining about? Look at these, all these Marines dressed in full glory. And I mean, they were so professional about everything they did. So I wasn't thinking about being warm, but when I saw Jamaria come out and he got excited, I literally got goosebumps on a 90 degree day.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
It was, but a very impactful day to be a part of.
And absolutely.
From all angles of that.
And absolutely. It's hard to tell somebody what you do. You almost, and I'm the same. You almost have to experience it before you can really get it. I can look at slide decks. You could do a wish and you could tell me about it, but it's not going to land with me the same way as if not only was I a wish granter, but just being present like Jamaria's wish. It's got an energy and a feeling that you feel you've made a lasting contribution to that kid. And not only that kid, but everybody around them, you've now kind of galvanized a feeling that you can all own on that particular day. And they just happen to be the focal point of that day. But you can tell everybody about it. People can see it on TV. They can see videos and all that. But when you're actually there making it happen, it is very gratifying.
It is. And anybody who's interested in experiencing that can become a Wish Celebration volunteer and do what you're doing, be a wish granter and experience that. And once you experience it, you're kind of hooked in.
That's right.
Yeah. Starting as a wish granter, I believe in 2019?
I thought it was more like 2018, but it could be 2019. I'm getting old. I don't remember all these details anymore.
2018, 2019, to where we're at now, about six-ish years later, going from a wish granter volunteer just starting now to being on the board, being the board chair, making your historic record donation that you're at now. That's a relatively, I feel like, short time frame to move and get so deeply involved in the mission in such a wide variety of ways. What was kind of that pivotal moment for you that you were thinking, I want to do more. I want to get more involved with this?
The question is pretty clear, but what really made the difference to me was the first wish. And it just goes right off what I was talking about. When you're actually involved in it, it's no longer something that might be interesting. It's something that says, how do I do more? How can I do more? And it may not be for everybody. People sometimes don't want to get too emotionally engaged because they have their own issues. And I don't pass any judgment on anybody for any decisions they make or what charities they choose to give to. But for me, it checked all the boxes in so many ways. I wanted something that I felt passionate about, not just to do it to say, oh yeah, I'm into philanthropy. I wanted to make a meaningful difference, and I wanted to align my time and my money and my passions all at the same time. And Make-A-Wish did all of that, and it came in its full glory on the first wish I gave. Well, I didn't give. I was, you know, the leader of pulling the wish together, but ultimately, as they say, it takes a village, and it's certainly all these wishes do. It's not about one wish granter. It's you. It's all the organization that people don't see. But actually seeing that come together, I walked away from that with the mindset of not, well, that's done. What do I do next? I walked away with, what am I going to do and do more of it? And, you know, to your point, you just talked about the donation my family made, my wife and I did. We've had a good life. A lot of people assume I get involved in Make-A-Wish because maybe we had a sick kid or a sick grandkid, and then that's how I got so involved. Actually, all of our kids are very healthy, grandkids and kids. And I don't take that for granted. I have a lot of gratitude that we're in that position, and not every family is as lucky as we are. And instead of just sitting back and being happy, we don't have to deal with it, we're in a position to be able to give back. We always lived well beneath our means, and because we knew we were going to be involved in philanthropy. And by the way, I didn't wait till I retired to be philanthropic, but I haven't been this engaged in a philanthropic effort ever in my life. We've always been, we do a little bit here, a little bit there. They were feel-good kind of stuff, and we knew we were making a difference, but I didn't really develop the passion I have now until I got involved in Make-A-Wish. But the catalyst, and when I knew I wanted to do more, a direct, clear answer to your question, wish one with David.
And what was that wish?
Well, he was all about WWE, the wrestling. Unfortunately, we had this little thing, you know, called COVID. And all the plans for COVID blew up. His idea to go to the World Wrestling, I guess it's their Super Bowl. And when I first met David, and he was non-communicative, so we had to have a sign language person with all times. And he had a lot of different medical issues. So he was so into just a few things, and WWE was one of them. And my knowledge of WWE was zero before I met him, right? So my wife would come home and I'd be watching wrestling kind of stuff and trying to figure out the names of the moves and the different people and who the hot shots are at the time. And I got to actually be able to communicate with him kind of on something of his interest, because he didn't really care about my background. Why would he, right? But when we started to kind of coordinate on things that we had common interest in, that was very exciting. But COVID shifted moved the goal line for a lot of kids, corporations, people, families, all that, but certainly for the Wish kids. And ultimately, he was also into the franchise, which I came up to speed on very quickly, Fast and the Furious. So we did a car show a little bit further outside the suburbs here. And I contacted a guy who had the car show. He was the CEO, and he has several different organizations around the United States. And he said, I'll put out a call to action. Well, that didn't mean much to me. And okay, we need to make sure we have some cars for him to see there. Well, he put this out to a car club, and this community reacted in a big way. And David got to ride in these crazy, like Deadpool themed sports cars, and he just had a ball. And then after that, we rented a theater to watch, whatever it was, Fast and Furious 7, 9, 12, I don't even know anymore. But he had his friends and his family meet him there, and he didn't know they were going to be there. So he walked in and they were all there. But, you know, these all-day events, they take a lot to pull off for the whole team. Mm-hmm. But it's so worth it when you see the joy in the kid's face. Yeah. But that was the wish.
That's incredible. And yeah, people, I feel like, don't realize how much goes into it to coordinate.
Yeah.
All of that, even just the getting from the car show to the theater.
Well, yeah. And by the way, they rode in a limo, which they've never been in either. Mm-hmm. So that was as big of a deal as anything, because we were taking them around in a limo to and from. But to your point, you know, one of the reasons why I continue to do wish granting, and if you talk to anybody on the board, I'm kind of a beating the same drum every time. I really like board members to be involved in wish granting. Not all of them have the time to do it, and I get that. It makes you a better board member because you see the energy the team puts into making all this stuff happen. And that way, when people come and talk about the need for resources or why we didn't get something done, the penny drops with you and you see you can connect all the dots. I think wish granting makes you a better board member. You know, I had a good career, certainly, and the idea that we're in a position to be able to give back in a material way in the things that we care about, and Make-A-Wish happens to be my passion. That's not going to go away when my board term is up. In fact, I'm starting up with Stephanie, the CEO, and alumni council and ex-board members. We need to be a little more active because we all share that same passion. But and I won't stop wish granting either.
Great.
Yeah.
We love
You know, I don't know how effective in 10 years when I'm in my mid 70s, you know, you're going to want to see a 75-year-old wish granter, but I'm game if they're open.
And you're a great wish granter. So Any Wish Kid's going to be lucky to have you
thank you.
A wish granter today or 10 years down the line.
Well, thank you.
As you're wrapping up your time on the board, you've decided to create a lasting legacy here at Make-A-Wish. I know you've said that you're going to continue to wish grant, but you're giving the record donation of $2.5 million. You're including us in your estate plans, your history of giving, your time, and your money at Make-A-Wish. For you as a donor and a financial supporter, how did you kind of decide to support Make-A-Wish in such a significant way versus another charitable organization?
We are active in other charitable opportunities, but not at this level. We do give, but as I had said earlier when we were talking, I want my time, my money, and my passion all aligned. And Make-A-Wish has never disappointed me in the, I guess we're not sure if I've been here 6 or 7 years, but I'll figure that out at a later date. But it's not when I start, it's when I end. And I didn't want this to be just my time's up by bylaws on the board, and now I'll just go off and do something else. I got very serious about thinking through what I wanted to commit to right after I had retired, and I could kind of, the smoke kind of cleared from the daily grind, because we lived in Basel, Switzerland for 7 years, and I came back here and retired. I ended up going back into the workforce and with a different company for 5 years. You know, I was so excited about retirement. My wife was very excited about having me retired, and then both of us couldn't wait for me to get back to do the work, because it turns out my wife actually did stuff when I wasn't around, and she has a life to live too. So I needed to be challenged. So I got back into work, but I didn't want to just change one treadmill for another in work. It was my time to give back. And I knew I wanted to do that probably from my 40s. I never thought we would be economically in the position we're in. And rather than just take a victory lap with it, it's like, what are we going to do to put it to work? Because I think it sends a message too to your kids and your grandkids that, oh, that's an important part of the legacy. It's not just making it, it's what do you do with the money you make. Why Make-A-Wish? It's because the 6 years has been far more fulfilling than I could have ever imagined. And when you got a good thing going and you trust and believe in the organization and you believe in the people running it, and I don't mean just like the board. I don't mean just the chief executive officer. I mean people like you and everybody that I met in this organization. You're certainly not doing this for the money. I mean, you're not, you know, this isn't something that you're going to build mansions and buy yachts with. You're doing it because you have passion. And the only way these organizations work is if people feel that bond up and down the organization. That's why I love coming into the office. I love wearing the branding that, we have as a group here within Make-A-Wish. Did I point to the right side? I did. I feel proud to be part of this group. And I don't know where I could find something better. And frankly, I don't know why I need to find something better. Sadly, the kids aren't going to stop getting sick. This isn't like we're going to do this for 5 years, and then once we stop this pesky need for Make-A-Wish, then I'll move on to something else. There's always going to be a need. And when you connect with these kids, I'm sorry to be a little redundant with it, but that's what it's all about. When you connect with them and you know that there's 10, 20, 50, thousands more just like them, you can make a difference for those kids. What more does someone need? For me. Mm-hmm. Now, again, there's other charities that are fantastic. And I never, ever judge when people go for one charity and they don't go for Make-A-Wish. Just do something that you feel like you make a difference. And I found my holy grail here in this organization.
That's incredibly moving. I find, like, I'm one of the people here for us seeing how passionate other people get about it, because we live it every day and are such a regular part of what we're doing, that hearing people who, like yourself, who are coming in as a volunteer, as a board member, come in and be like, I feel so strongly about this mission and the work that you're doing here, that I want to take what I've worked so hard earning, or my time that, you know, everybody only has 24 hours in a day. Right. You got other obligations going on, but being able to take your time and your talent and finances and be like, I want to support the work that you're doing here is very re-energizing, I think, for all of our staff.
Well, I really appreciate the comments. And just so you know, Sloan, we're blessed that we have a really strong board. And I know a lot of other groups, they have some good board members. Some are very strong, some are not so much. But I feel really good about the people that we have, that it's not just about checking a box. It's not about filling out a resume. It's nothing like that. When they get here, you can see the level of engagement. And I'm talking about financial engagement or wish granting or providing their talents. It could be strategic planning. It could be in finance, could be in succession planning, all these different things. They all matter. Mm-hmm. And we have a really good breadth of skills on the board that are bringing a lot to the party that maybe you guys don't see either. And I think you've seen it, whether it's us as a board or the associate board or even the staff or even the volunteers, we have to continue to do more to create that connectivity and kind of mix it up so we all feel like we can, you know, the old saying, check your stars on your shoulder at the door. Nobody cares who's a general when you walk in. That's a culture I'd like to create, where I don't care what your title is. If we are trying to make this kid's wish happen, then we talk. And that's the way it should be. In a functioning not-for-profit, you have to have that same kind of camaraderie that you're all doing it for the same reason.
I think it's evident that our board is doing that, speaking for myself, because I can't speak for everybody, but I see board members showing up, and not only at like the board meetings or wishball, but rappelling down a 36-story building or coming out to walk or coming to the other things that we're doing or stopping by the office and getting involved in wish granting. It's not just showing up to the boardroom and working with the leadership staff. I know I've connected with numerous board members and I connect with them as Make-A-Wish, but on LinkedIn and see kind of what they're talking about us. And it's always just, you can see the passion that everybody has for what they're doing, that it's not just kind of having that recognition of, oh, I'm a board member for Make-A-Wish. It's the passion for the mission and the drive there.
You know, Sloan, probably one of the most meaningful things that happened as my time on the board, because we had chatted about that offline, was one that I don't think a lot of people know about outside the organization. When COVID hit, unfortunately, you know, kids didn't stop getting sick because they were dealing with COVID. The kids just kept queuing up and the need was there. And unfortunately, because I think I could be wrong here, plus or minus 5%, but I think about 80% of our wishes were travel, 20% were other events or activities. And with COVID, I mean, that just stopped. But the kids didn't stop getting sick. And I know a lot of organizations, whether it be for-profit, not-for-profit, they dealt with that by laying people off or saying, look, we're going to cut your hours down to 20% or whatever it happens to be. The thing that I'm probably most proud of is that I was, an advocate for it, but the brains of the outfit came internally here with Stephanie, Heather, and several other people. But they were the tip of the spear on it. We came up with this Wish Kids Need Us Now campaign, because even though we saw the kids queuing up, it didn't mean that they were going to somehow magically fall off the list if we don't do something to prepare for this big backlog that was coming at us post COVID. So we created when I say we, I mean the broad we, the whole organization, we created a campaign, Wish Kids Need Us Now, and we raised almost $4 million to be able to prepare to deliver at a rapid pace a number of backlogged wishes that had occurred. And to me, that was something that it would have been really easy just to say, well, you know, what are you going to do? It's COVID. This is an act of God. There's nothing we can do to work around this. We actually were very proactive in all of that, and we were as well positioned, I believe, as probably any chapter in the Make-A-Wish Network out of the 57-ish chapters to be able to react to that and work down our backlog. And that was really heavy lifting, really hard work, because even though we created the money pool, then you guys had to execute all that. And in a lot of cases, you did that just through heavy lifting and hard work. It's not like all of a sudden you got 40% more resources. So that to me was the epitome of a team effort, preparing for it, acknowledging it, dealing with reality, and then having a team you trust to execute once the money is there. Yeah. I'm very proud of that.
And it's the backlog. I think we're just starting to finish getting the last of that through. So it's not just even, all right, travel restrictions have lifted. All of those wishes get granted.
You're right.
It's a good point. It's been like a continuous effort the past three years. To continue to get those kids through. So the proactive measures of being, of seeing that and being like, those kids are still going to be there in a couple years. We're going to need to be able to support their wishes, I think is what made it so successful and being able to complete those wishes and get them done.
I agree. Well, and to the point, I mean, just for anybody who's looking at this, I mean, coming out of COVID, I'll stay away from the numbers, but our backlog is less than half of what it was when we came out of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't just happen. That was a lot of toiling that occurred. So kudos to you and the team for making that kind of stuff happen.
And that's the big kudos goes to the mission team for sure. We all saw how much effort they were going through and seeing every month the number of wishes being granted, more wishes being granted in a month than there are days.
Yep.
What is one thing about a nonprofit board that you wish people knew more of or understood better?
So I sit on academic boards, for-profit boards, and not-for-profit. The governance that a board provides and the operating staff, the roles are very clear. What I really like about not-for-profit is this isn't just presiding and coming in and listening to plans and updates. You have a team in philanthropy, especially, I'm going to say this specifically for Make-A-Wish, that really wants the time, the treasure, the thoughts, the talent, all of that from a board. And I feel personally you have a bigger opportunity to influence in non-for-profit than in some cases you do even for-profit. And maybe it's just the people that I've worked with here, but in non-for-profit, you can make suggestions, you can get involved at a level you probably can't do on a for-profit board for a variety of reasons. That's true, whether it be a public or a private company. But non-for-profits are generally very lean, and they like the ability to have an active board. They don't want them to do their job. I mean, you have a staff and a team that are paid to do the job, but they are not at all afraid of people leaning in and wanting to get deeply involved. Whereas in for-profit boards, I think that line of demarcation between governance and operating is very, very firm. In non-for-profit, because you're so strapped for resources, because you have to watch your cost and the optics of all of that and make sure the money gets to the people we're serving, they'll take any help they can get. And I will say this, and again, it's not just me, it's the whole board. It's a really talented group of people. And our talents aren't just all the great stuff we've done. We have a lot of scars of stuff that we've done wrong over the years too, including working with other not-for-profits. That feedback is really welcomed and recognized by the team here. So I feel the ability to influence and impact is much more significant.
What is one thing that you've done? I'm sure there's many, but one thing since being on the board, an initiative or a project that you've done that you're especially proud of?
Oh, well, I haven't really done a lot just by myself because I can't do a lot by myself. I think that I would go back to the Wish Kids Need Us Now, being a great advocate for that. Oh, I will take credit for one thing that, because I don't want to make it look like I'm doing all of this. I mean, we have to pull it all together. But one of the ideas that I came up with that we're actioning is we have a number of really high-end donors. It's one thing to do a donor appreciation night and get newsletters and all that, but we've started up where me and a couple other board members, on our money, not the foundation's money, we take those donors and their spouses out to dinner. My wife comes with too. And then usually Stephanie and Heather or Stephanie and Linda Park or somebody like that, they will come to represent the organization. And I always started off when we bring them to say, look, we're not taking you out to dinner to shake you down for more money. Okay. And they always kind of like that because it disarms them. Mm-hmm. like they don't feel like this is going to be a pitch to get something more. We sit and talk and say, look, you guys have been so involved in donating your money and in some cases your time as well. We feel we owe it to you to tell you what your money has done. We give them an update on the business. We tell them the challenges that we face. We hear from them their recommendations on what we could be doing better. And it's in a very, very comfortable setting with great food, a little bit of wine involved, and you just get a very direct feedback in a very small, intimate setting. Mm-hmm. And almost without exception, the byproduct of that has been they've become even more cemented in their relationship with Make-A-Wish. In some cases, they've donated even more money. In one case, a gentleman joined the board. I'm not going to say it was all tied specifically to that dinner, but people, no matter how much money and time they make, they want to feel valued. And we need to value those high-end donors because it's not just another check they're writing. We want their heart too. Mm-hmm. And it gives them an opportunity to feel even a greater connection. That I'll take credit for.
And what a great opportunity to hear directly from the donors of kind of what they would want to see exactly. more of and what's working and what we can change, not only like for them, but for all of our donors. You know,
right.
it's well, getting that perspective. Yeah,
you're right. This isn't just about meeting their needs. They're usually, if they're bringing it up, somebody else or a bunch of other people are thinking about it the same yeah. way. And none of us are so smart that we don't have blind spots. And these donors not only need to be appreciated, they have choices too. They can put their money into a lot of different areas. They need to feel that appreciation and that their money is making a difference. And I think that the dinners have an opportunity to do that. I wish we could do dinners with all donors, but there's not enough hours in the day. But I think we're going to see this trickle down deeper in the organization, and that's a good thing.
And it's, I think, being able to take that and maybe like replicate it at a scale that we could
yeah.
do something similar with more donors, maybe not necessarily a dinner, but checking in more with donors at every level of the organization.
Yeah. And Sloan, just thinking a little bit more about the question you asked me, you know, what difference have I made? What am I most proud of? I know I made a difference in the lives of 8 kids. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. And to still be connected and continue to see yeah. how that impacts them. And maybe it's just a happy memory now, but it's something that has played a role in
yeah.
in their life and their childhood and changed their perspective on how they see the world because a volunteer and a donor like you came along and made that possible.
Thank you. Yeah. And I, you know, just to kind of bring closure to that, I also want my kids and my wife and my grandkids and my kids to all look at this and be proud of what I'm doing and giving back. And hopefully that sets a tone, whether it's with Make-A-Wish or other philanthropy that they choose to do. But your kids are all watching you, your grandkids are watching you and how you behave. And do you do what you say you're going to do? You know, we've all had missteps of things that we've done. And, you know, maybe you wish you would have done it different. I have a chance to really set a tone here that philanthropy is an important part of my legacy. And I want it to be a legacy that all the family members share in.
Have you or how have your kind of kids got involved with Make-A-Wish?
They're very supportive. They're all starting with 4 grandkids. That's across our 3 children, and they're all the young ones. They're starting to put their own action plans into place on what do they want to commit to. They're active in terms of attending the ball and supporting me. And, you know, I always encourage anybody, kids or friends or former colleagues, do something. Get involved in something. If it's not Make-A-Wish, I hope it's Make-A-Wish, but if it's not, you know, some people, they animal cruelty shelters or, wounded warriors. There's a lot of things that they're all considering right now, but I think they're feeling a little bit of pressure that I don't want to make them feel like they have to do it to keep up with dad. But I do hope that it sets a tone that this is important. And frankly, we're in a position to be able to give back. Not everybody can do that financially, but people can put time in. I just happen to be able to align the time and the finances.
And the time is equally as important to have the volunteers out there. We have such a strong team of volunteers and it wouldn't be possible without them out there doing, helping with meeting with the Wish families and discovering those wishes and celebrating them. And I think that's sometimes a little bit of a misconception is how much time you need to be able to pour into that. And it can be a few hours a month. It's not necessarily, I mean, it's nice when you're retired and you have yep. the extra time to put into it, but it can be, you know, one Saturday a month that That's you're right. meeting with your wish family. That I think is being able to fit that into a schedule and not feel like you have to give up a social life or hobbies. You can really intertwine it to what you're doing.
Yeah. So I consider myself to be kind of semi-retired, but I'll always make time for this. Whether I go back to a full-time job, that's doubtful. But I will always remain engaged. I like healthcare. I've been in healthcare my whole life, and I will continue to do boards and help out in different ways. But I'll always make time for this. This is the most gratifying thing. I get paid exactly zero to be doing what I'm doing here, but it's been the most gratifying job I've ever had.
Over the years, you said that you've been involved with 8-9 wish families.
Yep.
What have they taught you? What have you gotten from those wish families?
I would say theme-wise, I take something away from all of them. But theme-wise, personally, it's given me gratitude for what I have, what we have as a family, that we're fortunate to not need the services like a Make-A-Wish organization, because there's no guarantees that that's going to be the case. The other thing is it's given me perspective in terms of resilience. You know, look, when you have things, just living your life, things happen, bad things happen. So in some cases, medically, and I'm bringing that back to the Wish Kids now. And, you know, when I get a medical piece of news that's not very exciting to hear about, I think about people like Mia and David and Cyrus and all the kids that I've been dealing with. They can bring a smile to the party every day. They deal with it head on. I go visit them in the hospital. Maddie, the little girl I'm dealing with now, she has brain cancer, and I walk in and she's always smiling. And if that isn't resilience and being able to face adversity, the best of people, then I don't know what is. And I can always learn from that, because we all, let's face it, well, I can't say we all, but I know I am. There are days you get into a pity party and you're thinking, oh my God, I got to do this and I got to get that procedure and I got to go that looked at. And I'm like, what am I doing? Who am I kidding? I've had a great life and hopefully it'll be many, many years more. But look at these kids. They're facing it head on. Why can't I? Resilience and gratitude is the answer.
As we wrap up, is there anything we haven't touched on that you feel is important to share with those who are listening?
I wouldn't say anything that I haven't already talked about. I would just say, if you're in a position to give back with time, treasure, or talent, whichever one it happens to be, Make-A-Wish is open and ready to bring you in, because we can use all the help we can get, and you won't regret it. I know there's not a day that I've been involved when I've regretted getting involved, and as you can see, I've gotten in pretty deep with Make-A-Wish. And I don't plan to change that. So we're open for business to anybody who's watching this and thinking about it. And if it's not Make-A-Wish, just realize there's a lot of needs out there that people have. And if you can be part of their solution, do it.
And all the information to get involved, as always, is in our little description for the podcast. So make it really easy to just click on that link and get started.
Good deal. Well, right, thanks now for having me today. I appreciate it.
Thank you for coming in. It's been a joy having you on the podcast and good on the board and here at Make-A-Wish.
You're very welcome.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Beyond the Wish. If you'd enjoy this episode and Mike has inspired you to get involved as a wish grantor or a donor, visit our website, wish.org/Illinois, to learn more on how you can take the first step to become a wishmaker. Tune in every month as we delve into the power of a wish, the unwavering dedication of volunteers, and the transformative experiences that shape lives forever. Discover the incredible stories of hope, resilience, and joy that fuel Make-A-Wish's mission. Learn about challenges and triumphs faced by these extraordinary children and their families, and how Make-A-Wish provides a beacon of hope in their darkest moments. You can grant wishes too. Visit our website, wish.org/Illinois, to get involved today. And until next time, best wishes.